in a world full of straight people. Aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
Oh boy, Matt. Matt,
Big
my
show.
big show. My fanboy cork is about to pop out of my mouth. I am truly about gush on someone in a truly unprecedented way. We have Armistead Maupin on today's show, which is
the get of gets. We throw around the word icon, we throw around the word legend, but is there anybody more iconic, more legendary?
I mean, his work is such a part of my life and such a part of my like journey as an adult person who is queer and like such a part of individuating myself from my own family who I love and just all there's so many things that his characters and his work have been like signposts through that it honestly, and I'm aware as you are that he is a human being who likes to talk and will have work that he would like to promote, which is the case here. There's a new book in the Tales of the City series, but just the idea of him coming on here literally never entered my mind. I consider him almost like a Jessica Fletcher. Like a prolific author who also doesn't exist and you can't really interact with him in real life.
It does feel like he transcends podcasts, you know, like the fact that we're just waiting for him to enter the Zoom right now. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to jump in with him whenever he comes. But the fact that I'm even saying those words don't make it's like Armistead Maupin's going to be on Zoom with us. Like
it just doesn't, it doesn't compute.
It doesn't make sense. We should say the new book in the Tales of the City series is called Mona of the Manor. Mm-hmm. It is probably out right now when you're hearing this. And I think this is the 10th book in the series. It's supposed to be the final one. He has said in the past that it's a final one. So maybe we'll you know, get a final answer on that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Who's to say? It is a bit of a time jump, a time leap backwards mm-hmm. to a time when the character of Mona Ramsay is alive and living on a manor in England. Mona is one of my favorite characters in the history of the written word. It is lovely to see her back. I'm giddy.
And Armistead himself is in London, so we'll mm-hmm. ask him all about that when he joins us. In the meantime, I know we can't focus on anything else, but just to distract us, how are you? What's going on?
You know, I'm doing great. Just back from Missoula, Montana. My sweet nephew Burke got married to now my niece. We'll just call him my niece and my friend Haley. Congratulations, Burke and Haley. It's a beautiful service in like a converted barn on the fairgrounds in Missoula, Montana. It was just it was so gorgeous and
officiated.
I did officiate, and it was a great day. My whole sprawling Irish Catholic family was there. And since that is not home for most of us, I have two nephews who live in Montana and now a niece, but everyone else was coming in from somewhere else. It was my whole big family. And we were, you know, at holidays, there's reasons to come together, but then, you know, there's reasons to go away You know, if when I'm back in St. Louis, I have friends I want to see, and so does everyone else, and whatever. This was like we were just there for this, and there were a lot of events, and it was a lot of time together, and it was a lot of exposure to my family, who I love, and the cousins, and cousins once removed, and second cousins, and whatever, cousins by marriage, who I remember as children, are all now adults who are interesting and fun and funny. And it was a really great hang. So now, Matt, we are looking forward at a week of music that is making the 1985 versions of us burst with excitement.
Yeah. Tell me tomorrow, everything that tomorrow lies ahead.
Okay. Uh-huh. Tomorrow, Friday, we are getting on a plane at Burbank Airport. We're going to Las Vegas. We're seeing the second to last U2 show at the Sphere. My friend Scott Gimple, showrunner of the Walking Dead universe, whose new show, The Ones That Live, is out now. And it's really good. It's got me back in the Walking Dead universe.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to see that.
It's great. It's great. I mean, both of the leads are outstanding. It's honestly highly recommended. I'm not just saying that. He and I have been talking about going. He's like, I think I might have a connection to tickets, whatever. It was chatter, chatter, chatter for a long time. Finally, this week, he was like, the person came through. So we got tickets for the three of us. We're all getting on a plane. Ben has to work first thing the next morning. He's getting on the first flight out. There was talk of him getting on a bus that leaves at midnight from the Las Vegas Strip and lets you off at Union Station. I said, let's forget that bus exists. Let's not be on that bus. Who else is on that bus? I don't want to know. I don't want to know who else.
Are you on the 6 a.m. flight back?
I am not. I'm going to extend all the way to, you know, perhaps 2 in the afternoon.
Possibly the wisest thing for him to do is to stay up on. I know we always say that with these flights, but I mean, in Vegas, 6 a.m. After it.
He's going to need to be alert at the Sphere. We're staying. Yeah. So, yeah, he's up and out, which is probably good because nothing good happens after, you know,
that's true.
In anywhere, but especially Las Vegas. Anyway, so he comes back. We do that. Monday, we're going to the Forum for Madonna. And I'm nuclear level excited.
When was the last time you seen her in concert?
I saw her last time I saw her. Only other time I ever saw her was at the Forum. And it was, I think it was maybe, could it have been Confessions on a Dance Floor, that tour?
Maybe.
I think it was.
I saw her at the Forum too, but it was, I think even maybe the one before that, but this was like in the mid-aughts.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I wonder if we were at the same show.
We might have been. What I remember is that she does not allow air conditioning. So it was unbelievably sweltering hot. This one's happening in March. It might not be so, so bad, but we'll see. And I know on this tour, she's not taking the stage until kind of late, but we can take it.
Yeah, we were at the Brooklyn show that, you know, people are, or somebody is suing her for showing up so late, I believe. But I didn't mind one bit. In fact, it was, I expected it. I actually appreciated how late she came out, and it is so much fun. Like, and she kills it. There's no piece of you that's like, I don't know, cringing a little bit at her age or any of that. I don't think that's part of the experience. I think you're just genuinely on the ride of what a fucking incredible performer she is.
Yeah. Yeah. The greatest. I have seen some little bits and pieces of people's iPhone videos. And I will say some of the movement that I am seeing from Madonna is something that I would classify as Idina Menzel level, but I don't care. Give it to me.
I know of what you speak, and yet that didn't, I don't know how to explain it. I think it will feel differently in person.
Fully expect that it will.
Very excited to compare notes on this.
Mm-hmm. Great. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm excited. You can say that I'm excited. Speaking of lawsuits, are you following the Willy Wonka show in Glasgow? drama?
Vaguely. I mean, I've seen some images. Okay. For anybody who's not familiar, mm-hmm. this was advertised as a Willy Wonka experience.
A Willy Wonka experience, yeah, like a real trip to the factory, to Wonka Land in a larger sense. And so the promotional materials used AI-generated images to really make it look enchanting and beautiful and high-tech. And so people bought tickets of, I think, around £50 to go. And then they got there and it's fully like someone's unfinished basement and there's like a big lollipop. And that's
yep.
it. It is such a taste of Twitter drama, like, you know, the Twitter story, the story that bit by bit unfolds online, like we really haven't seen since Firefest. And certainly in the last year and a half, we have not had any enjoyment on Twitter. This has been delicious. The fact that I found out most recently about this show is that not only did they use AI to generate the promotional images, they also used it to create some of the story. So in the story of Basement Wonka or whatever it is, there is a villain called the Unknown, and Willy Wonka has to defeat it at the end, and he does it with a vacuum cleaner. Now, I don't know if that is part of the AI version of the story or if it was just like, we need something that I guess looks like a sword or something that you could zap things with. And somebody was like, oh my, I have one of those vacuum cleaners that looks like that. I don't know. But that's part of the story.
I didn't know this.
Oh my God, it's so good. There's one Oompa Loompa. She looks as though she just got off the midnight bus from the Las Vegas Strip and took it all the way to Glasgow. It's delicious. It is a world of pure imagination, and I'm here for it. It harkens back to the days.
It's honestly shocking that someone hasn't tried to do that well, you know, to do a Willy Wonka themed experience well, mm-hmm. because
we're ready.
It would be. Yeah, we're ready.
We're ready. Have you done Astra Lumina down in Palos Verdes?
I don't even know what that is.
It's this thing where it's like, it's in a botanical garden, but it's at night and there's like lasers and lights and stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those things that you walk through. It takes like an hour and there's like cool effects and stuff like that. And you do it and you're like, I should probably 10% be on drugs right now. And I forgot mm-hmm. to be, whatever. And I also keep calling it AstraZeneca, but Astra Lumina is running for a few more days down in Palos Verdes. And it's great. They could do something like that is Wonka themed. I'd be here for it.
Absolutely.
How much can it be?
By the way, just want to say and this is without a trace of shade, we're 20 minutes into our scheduled sure. time, and we don't, our guest isn't here. If this ends up being a Waiting for Guffman episode mm-hmm. where it's just about us waiting for his arrival, I am fine with that. Much like okay Madonna, like I respect the, like, certainly this is someone who's earned the right. But just to say that, there's a world in which this is an episode without a guest, and that's
I mean, and that's the way that it goes. That's the way that it goes sometimes. And honestly, if anybody has earned the right to, you know, be fashionably late, to make an entrance,
100%,
it's this gentleman. What is happening with you?
You know what I wanted to tell you is, so 30 Minute Musicals that
yes.
my friend works again, and Dave and I were both their little production of Teen Witch at Akbar recently. Another show in their repertoire that we've done a bunch is Roadhouse, and we're doing it again on March 17th at Dynasty Typewriter. If you're in LA, it's one night only. Just go to the Dynasty Typewriter website, March 17th.
That is St. Patrick's Day, my friend.
I think it's St. Patrick's Day. And yeah, it is. It's St. Patrick's Day.
You may have to do some actual bouncing in this case, especially if it's at night. People are running around. That's a Sunday.
People show up really wasted. Great. I don't know how familiar you are with Roadhouse, the movie.
Actually, I've never seen it.
It is, you know, a Patrick Swayze 80s classic. And we're doing this kind of in honor of the remake that's coming out with Jake Gyllenhaal playing that part. And, you know, we don't have Jake Gyllenhaal. We do have Matt McConkey playing the Patrick Swayze role.
Oh, and my God.
I hope I get to use the same. It was many years ago when we did, I mean, like maybe 10, but the wig that I had was was so not like a man mullet. It was more of like a Carol Brady shag, you know? It was just so wrong, absolutely wrong. And a lot of stage combat. I think Tom Link is going to be rejoining us, and he's so funny. So yeah, if you're in town, come out.
Oh my God, I love it. Now, is this going to be, not to spoil anything, are we doing one tank top throughout? Is it a series of ever-changing tank tops? Did I say
it's
laptop?
It's so funny that you asked that. I don't know. I heard tank tops because tank tops are on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when I did this 10 years ago, listen, I feel great about my body and all of that stuff, but I was in better shape then. And so much of the character is about showing off he's constantly like doing Taekwondo shirtless and everything. And we did a lot of that. And I feel a little less confident about doing that this time. So all that to say, it's just strange that you brought up the tank top of it all, because I have been prepping myself for that discussion with Brooke, the director. You know, can we get away with keeping the tank top on throughout the show? You know?
Okay.
Because if you've seen Swayze's body in that, it's a lot to live up. And Jake Gyllenhaal's, you know, body in the remake. A lot to live
up to. Talk about AI enhanced. It seems unreal almost what Jake Gyllenhaal has achieved with his body. But come on. I don't want to have any negative self-talk. Get out there.
Thank you.
Get that tank top off. Do those flips and twirls and Taekwondo moves. Taekwondo moves is what I almost said.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it, Matt. Come on.
Oh, God. Well, if Armistead ever shows up, I'll ask his opinion. We've made contact, Renee says.
Manager's seeing where he is.
Okay, great.
Okay.
I think all this anticipation is just making this better.
Yeah, I think so. I am
excited to ask him about
where he is right now.
Where the fuck were you? No.
Mm-hmm.
Outing celebrities, because it's something he's been outspoken about in the past.
Uh-huh.
He had a friendship with Rock Hudson. Okay, he's logging on soon. Now, I think he also, did you watch the Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward documentary, Ethan Hawke one? It's so good. But a thing they barely touch on there is that there were rumors that Paul Newman was gay or bi.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing you've heard?
That is a thing that I've heard, and that is a thing that I know Armistead Maupin has said.
Yes, he has put that out there, so I'm excited to, I guess, gossip with him. I guess that's what this is really all about, is I just want gossip.
Yeah, good dish on, you know, people who are no longer with us, but continue to be the hottest human beings who have ever lived. I sort of just assume Paul Newman was bisexual, right? Like, you cannot move through this world looking like that reduce your possibilities by half.
Even if he was leaning straight, just by virtue of the way he, like, looking at himself in the mirror might have been enough to open his eyes to like how attractive the male form could be, I guess.
He's perfect. Yeah. Okay. I'm excited. Like, there are things that characters in the early Tales of the City stories say that may in fact have come true. Like, these characters may have been, you know, actually realer than real. They may have been actual visionaries. I'm dying to get into that. What are you watching right now, Matt McConkey?
Oh God. I'm in a bit of a downtime in terms of TV. There's nothing really. I mean, Love on the Spectrum, we just finished. Mm-hmm. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Housewives of Beverly Hills season is finally ending. That's been really powerful, but there's nothing. I'm excited for the new Kate Winslet show, The Regime. Anything? I don't know. I'm rewatching The West Wing.
That's nice.
Which, that's comforting. Yeah, always feels good, but I don't know. I got nothing. What about you?
We're doing Capote versus the Swans.
Oh yeah, I did the first episode.
I remember.
It's fun to see all those actresses.
Yeah, Yeah, it's great. I'm enjoying it. We have not yet watched the James Baldwin episode, but I'm very excited. And then on the exact other end of the spectrum, Couple to Throuple on Peacock.
Sorry, what?
Couple to Throuple. It is a dating show for couples who are considering the polyamorous lifestyle. Oh, so they're wow. on a, they're somewhere, they're in paradise. We don't know if it's an island. We don't know if it's, Temecula. It's, but they're in a beautiful area and they're in a big mansion. It's four couples, three male, female, one male, male. And then a whole bunch of singles who are in the sort of, poly lifestyle show up. And it's sort of like it's a process of the couples determining which of the singles they want to add to their couple to make it a throuple. And it's really badly done in every way. And it's kind of fascinating because it's all like the phony drama of a Temptation Island and a Love Island and all that. But because it's on Peacock, all of this, fucking and exploring and whatever, they can show. There's like night vision cameras in all the bedrooms. So you're watching all sorts of sort of awkward three ways. It's it's great. It's worth a look, is all I have to say.
Does it make being part of a throuple look remotely appealing?
No, not at all. No. I actually don't think that three ways can survive this show. It deserves, the casual three-way, the more committed throuple, all of these things deserve a much higher quality representation. But this one is definitely fun, just because it's also everyone involved is they're the kinds of people who would show up on Love Island. But unlike those people, there is a definite feeling, like a palpable sense of, I hope my mother doesn't watch this, on everyone's face. Sure. Like there's the kind of awkwardness in front of the camera that you haven't really seen since, the early days of The Bachelor. It's people are legitimately feeling strange about who they're being and what they're doing on camera. And that's, I could watch that all day.
I'm just thinking, I don't think I know any throuples in real life. Do you?
I have. I don't know any current throuples. I know a couple who sort of opened it up to a third for like a casual sort of thing for a while. And then that third was like, we're dating, you're my boyfriends. Like this is a thing and it's happening. And they're like, no, it actually isn't at all. And he was like, yes, it is. And it was a months long thing that I'm sure was very awkward to be a part of, but delicious to hear about. I don't know currently any throuples.
Every piece of it feels sounds like terrifying. I know, I feel so lame that I don't know any throuples, but I definitely do not aspire to be part of one. Mike and I went to a thing recently where we met a gay couple for the first time and they were super nice. And they seemed to be open. I got that vibe from them.
Did they see you across the room and like your vibe? Was it that kind of thing?
Well, no, actually, it was not that kind of thing. It was more just anecdotes they were sharing. And then afterward, we both get follows on Instagram. Michael doesn't even use Instagram. They're both sliding into his DMs and not mine. And it's not that I want them to slide into mine. It's just like, what calculations were they doing on their side that made that seem okay? You know what I mean? Like, and of course, Michael just like it handles it all with grace and lightness and whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely fine. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Believe me, if I were on the outside, I wouldn't be looking at this half of the couple either.
Stop it.
But listen, I'm just speaking my truth, but I would assume that, I don't know, the courtesy protocol would be, I guess we have to hit on both of them as opposed to only one of them at first, maybe?
That would appear to not be the case, I guess. How do you feel?
I wanted to kill them both. Sure. And believe me, I promise you that jealousy is only about wanting to keep my hot husband all to myself. It is not because I'm like, why didn't they like me? Again, yeah. I don't blame them. I get it. I just felt like it was so bold to, yeah. because they met us at the same time. And actually I was sort of more the connecting tissue mm-hmm. with this. It was sort of like, I'm the one who had the mutual friend. Just a very strange approach. I felt, but we haven't hung out with them since, if that mm-hmm. tells you anything.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you, is it the kind of thing where they're in your like other messages in Instagram? Because it feels like that whole messaging system is impossible to figure out. Like,
yeah,
if you're
it's not
following them and they send you a message, then it ends up in your, like, there, you have to scroll over to the requests.
Dave, this is kind of you, but no.
Okay.
I've but simply
if they were,
didn't get...
how would that feel? Can you imagine
if
that?
If they were, you know what? I think it would be more of like, oh, that's cute, and we move on from it. You know, it wouldn't be... I wouldn't be annoyed by it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm exposing these, like... insecurities and little parts of my wounded ego. This is what happens when you are waiting for Armistead Maupin and you just start yeah. spinning out.
Honestly, even when he's not here, he is affecting the way that we relate to ourselves and to one another.
Yeah. Yeah.
This probably is a good time to gush.
Yes.
Armistead Maupin's work reached me at the exact right moment. The first Tales of the City. Armistead Maupin, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. What an honor. I mean, we would wait for you until the end of time. So no apologies
please.
Needed here.
Truly, truly. I am Dave. That is Matt. Welcome. I was just saying how Tales of the City hit me in PBS miniseries form first in 1993 while I was in my first relationship at a very conservative Catholic college, a place that was absolutely not right for one young gay boy, much less two.
Yeah.
We watched it furtively because, you know, we had to be super undercover, and it provided such a window into a life and a world and a community that could be welcoming and joyful and sexy and satisfying. And it has been a North Star ever since. So thank you.
Thank you.
Let me gas you up. Right off the bat. Armistead, where are you?
I'm in London.
You're in London. Oh my God, it's late.
It's 5:43 here.
Okay, it's not too bad.
Oh,
all right.
Right in the middle of dinner time.
Hot roast in the oven.
Oh, fantastic. That's good living.
Oh.
Armistead, there's so much to discuss, but at this moment in entertainment history, what are you watching? Is there anything that you are on the couch binging? Have you?
Well, oddly enough, my husband and I are both binging two things we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Nice.
And Six Perfect. Feet Under. Both of which are just great. Amazing works of art, I think.
They're,
But agreed. That's very old hat now.
Sure.
Name some things and I'll tell you if I'm watching them.
Okay. You know, I did want to ask you about this. Capote versus the Swans. Is that available for
you? I haven't
you
watched
too?
That yet.
Okay.
I really want to. Do you recommend it?
I do recommend it. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's not always fun, but it's a wild performance from Tom Hollander. The last episode had Chloe Sevigny as CZ guest reciting a guest list to a party in a way that was very much like the Drew Drogi Chloe Sevigny videos, which I have to wonder whether that was on purpose. I don't know if you've seen that series of videos. It's interesting. And I wonder, because, you know, it's all about Truman Capote and his sort of unmasking and revealing of some of the bad behavior of some of the Park Avenue women he was friends with. I wonder whether that was a thing that you ever ran into in your...
No, I didn't hang out with people like that.
Sure. But
you
some of your characters
swans.
Are...
Well,
you know,
I had several characters
people.
That Pat Montandon, mm-hmm. who appears in the series as Prue Giroux.
Right.
might qualify as that sort of empty at the time, empty blonde beauty that, you know, was easy to laugh at. Right. The thing about Pat is she's now 90 something and we've reconnected. And wow. I like her very much. And
really?
She likes me, amazingly.
That is amazing.
I think with age, everything gets forgiven, you know.
Sure. See,
I found something in one of her books.
Yeah.
Where she said, as immortalized by Armistead Maupin in Tales of the City, she used that as a credit. She's been a lawyer by the first time, but apparently now I've immortalized her, so.
Yeah. Did you read her son's book, Oh, the Gloria?
Yes, I did. I like that very much.
Yeah, I did too.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, the Glory of It All, it's called.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
of course, Pat stepped in and wrote Oh, the Hell of It All.
Yes.
Totally bad form on her part.
Yeah. And not a great title, let's be honest. But yeah, an excellent book.
You know, as you were talking, Dave, about your introduction to Tales of the City, I was going like, I don't think I remember mine. It does feel like something that was just always there. But then I did have a memory of being in middle school, and I'm from a village in Ohio, like, you know, total Bible Belt, but happened to have a very cool progressive mom. And I was one of those kids that ticked off every single gay stereotype. And my mom obviously saw that. Anyway, I vaguely remember her kind of casually suggesting this show on PBS and seeing some of it and going, why did she recommend, you know, and in retrospect, it's so obvious. She just wanted me
mothers
to like,
always know.
See myself.
Always,
mothers always,
always
know.
Know in my experience.
Yeah. And, you know, Mona of the Manor is the 10th book in the series. And
yes.
Allegedly the final, although you have said that before.
I've said it so many times.
Can you be trusted?
I'm not to be trusted, really. But yes, I don't see where I could go from here. Mona of the Manor fills in a portion, a segment in the middle of the series. So it's not the concluding thing at all, but it covers something I didn't cover and wish I had covered. So I went back and covered it.
And it's timing wise, you must have started writing it around the time you moved to London.
Yeah, it was actually pandemic time. So it was good to have something to do.
Right, yeah.
Right. What is your take on San Francisco right now? How often do you get back? And
I haven't been back since we left.
Really?
It saddens me. I know that there are people that are happy to be there, and I don't want to take away from their life, but Bohemia sort of died. A rapid death, really. It's too many, you know, too many techie folks have taken over and spent too much money and made the place boring.
Is that the cause of death? Money?
Yeah, it usually is.
Yeah. Does Bohemia exist in that way anywhere now?
No, it probably doesn't. It's I'm sure there are people who will say that about England, but it's a fresh experience for me. So
sure.
And that's what we wanted. Chris and I wanted. We weren't just getting away from Donald Trump, but it did play a factor.
I'm sure it did. And you've fallen in love with the city by now.
I was in love with it long ago. I mean, I lived here, you know, visited cousins and things here over the years. And Chris lived here in 93, which was useful to me in writing Mona of the Manor, because he could tip me off to things that were happening at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you and Chris have a pretty great meet cute story. Can you share some of that?
Yeah. Well, I had seen him on a website for older gay men, and it was called Daddy Hunt at the time.
Daddy Hunt.
Great.
Because
name.
My housekeeper had posed it when they had an erotic apartment there, had posed for him And I'd seen pictures of him, not of him, but of the housekeeper who was stupendously endowed. And so I recognized Chris when I saw him walking down the street. And he's one of the best looking men I've ever seen. And so I just kind of spun around as we did in the old days and did that sort of whirl.
Yeah.
And I said, didn't I see you on a website? Not the coolest thing in the world to come up with, but he did say,
honest.
I actually own that website.
Oh.
So it was a great groundbreaker. And we swapped phone numbers and got together about a couple of weeks later.
I love that this is such a perfect combination of digital and analog cruising.
Yeah, it was the two things. I was on the cusp of that.
Yeah, unreal. A trailblazer as always.
Well, whatever it was, I'm really glad it happened.
Well, certainly.
Lovely guy.
Aside from writing, is Chris working in London, or what's your lifestyle
like?
He's a
photographer. He's just not doing much of that these days because there's no way to make a living at it. We're working on something together right now, which is a new book.
Oh, nice.
Which hasn't quite taken form yet, so I won't talk about that. But
okay.
It's based on somebody who was 100 years apart from me. I was born in like 1883, and I was in 1994, and who ran off to Hawaii and had a romance with a Hawaiian young man. And it's a fascinating story. He's a real life person.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, I think we're going to tell it. I don't know. It's not official yet. Had a discussion this morning about how I was going to approach this story.
Is it difficult to collaborate with your partner?
Is it difficult to collaborate with him?
Yeah.
Not so far.
Okay. Okay.
But this is the first time you've done
it. He's gathering the information, and he doesn't have an ego about the writing part of it. He just is gathering information. And so it's kind of great combo. But you could ask me that later and we'll see what happens.
Okay. We'll circle back around as the project develops, I hope. You know, there's something that I've been meaning that when I found out I was talking to you, I wanted to ask. There are so many moments from the Tales of the City series, so many lines that have stuck with me. I literally made pork chops this week and said pork chopo, lovo, lacto ovo. I was like, where's that from? Tales of the City. Like, there are lines and moments that just are in my DNA now. But Brian, in the first series of stories, says, someday we'll be 50-year-old libertines in a world full of 20-year-old Calvinists. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering to what degree you feel that that has actually come to pass.
Well, I think it came to pass some time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, sooner or later, everybody's out of style. Mm-hmm. I'm not grumpy about the younger generation today at all. We certainly hoped there wouldn't be the kind of narrow-minded children that are existing in the world today.
Yeah.
When you look at this younger generation of queer people, entertainers, activists, public figures, is there anybody specifically who kind of gives you hope for the future?
Well, in general, I'm just given hope by the fact that there's so much now. We can actually judge a property about whether or not it's good. Or, you know, not necessarily whether it's just gay. You know, we had so little to choose from in the old days. And there's just a rich array of television and film that and stars that are, you know, out. The two guys in, what the hell's it called? Matt Bomer and
Fellow Travelers.
Yeah, Fellow Travelers. You know, that's history making, that we can watch these guys get it on in a way that's really genuinely sexual, mm-hmm. and also move you and represent the full gay queer experience.
Yeah. In your youth, where did you find that kind of representation? Because there was almost none.
I don't know. I mean, there was few and far between.
Yeah.
In the early days, there were things like An Early Frost.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, well, that wasn't early at all, but I don't recall seeing any. I mean, there were shows like, Billy Crystal played a queer. That was what was wrong with it.
Mm. Well, soap. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, soap, thank you very much. There was nobody, to represent us.
Yeah. So in your youth, what were the movies that you gravitated to?
Well, in my youth, I gravitated to Singing in the Rain, which mm-hmm. I made my grandmother take me to see, three times just so I could memorize the songs.
Sure.
We didn't have them. You know, there was mention of queers, but it was in some horrendous way, I honestly don't. I mean, there were some later on, but I can't remember anything that influenced me as a child.
I remember An Early Frost, and I remember Our Sons with Julie Andrews and Anne Margaret.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As the mother of a, gay couple. And, Consenting Adults, I think. There were a lot of, TV movies when I was an early teenager.
You're naming some of them, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Late. That was sort of late. Before my time. I mean, after my time. We had very little.
Yeah, and those were my first, and they were, of course, all about AIDS. And, it was...
And how miserable ages. It was for the mothers.
Yes, terrible experience with mothers. And yet still knowing it was out there was like exciting. There was like a little frisson,
You hang on to whatever you get,
You hang on to whatever you get. Yeah, it was years.
And anybody who doesn't remember that is doing a disservice to the output that's happening now. I mean, they're really good shows that deal with the gay experience and with full-fledged queers. I mean, we had the first televised kiss in Tales of the City.
Yes.
And I remember sitting on the top of the hill when we were filming that scene. And let's see, who was it then? It was the guy playing Michael Tolliver and...
Marcus D'Amico. Billy Campbell. Right.
Mm. Both of whom are straight. Well, both, what, only one, n- neither claimed to be gay, although one was.
We're going to need that information.
But they were kissing there in the darkness on the side of the hill, and it was just the most amazingly transgressive thing I'd ever seen, because you just didn't show that.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much we've gotten used to that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so many of us are almost taking for granted that you mentioned fellow travelers, that the leads are both out, in their public lives. And we were talking before you got on about closeted celebrities, and you've been famously outspoken about some of them in the past. And obviously we've come a long way in terms of, mainstream acceptance. But I mean, I definitely know some, very current leading men who are still tiptoeing around the question.
Yeah,
I find so annoying. Do I need to mind my own business?
And you know about that. It just indicates an aspect of self-loathing on the part of these performers. And they've clearly written off the rest of us who know. But it's taking a long time for it to go away. But we have now actors that have based careers on that and I hope will not be branded as such for any future roles. I think Matt Bomer would look hot in anything.
Absolutely.
Couldn't agree more. Boys in the Band on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
And when his bare ass was revealed, the gasp from the entire audience, male, female, young, old, it was like the helicopter in Miss Saigon. It was like this incredible special effect that made everybody.
I'm sorry. I missed that one.
I mean, truly, it was like it should have won a special Tony. But you famously revealed that Paul Newman was bisexual and ran into
that's
a little bit.
Yeah,
it's what you had heard. Okay. Well, I mean, how do you know? And is it true? And tell me everything that you've ever heard.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to gossip with you.
No. At least not while the mics are on.
That's what we were hoping for. I also wanted to ask you about, you know, American politics. As you know, you mentioned you smartly escaped to the UK just in time before we face another presidential election. But I was also thinking specifically about Reagan's legacy and curious your take, because there's something about the way our culture talks about him right now, a sort of like whitewashing that we've done to our collective memories because of present day monsters that might seem so much more dangerous. What do you think about when...
Are you saying that Trump has raised the bar when it comes to that?
Lowered the bar.
I don't think we should let up on Ronald Reagan. He did some pretty damn awful things.
Okay, thank you. This is what I wanted to hear. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, because he managed to pull off that sort of lovable, avuncular, image, it doesn't, change what he did. And those of us who remember during AIDS, his deafening silence on the subject. All the more enraging, by the way, since he was a friend, his wife was a friend of Rock Hudson. And they wouldn't help out when, you know, they had a chance, could have done something. Doesn't mean Rock wouldn't have died. I think he was on his way, but they didn't want to make an effort because they didn't like how it made them look.
Yeah.
There's so many cowards out there in every department.
Let's switch gears to Mona of the Manor. We had Alan Pohl on recently who...
Love Alan. We talked to him just last night.
He's fantastic. And, you know, we touched briefly on the subject of potentially adapting Mona of the Manor. What are your feelings on...
Well, I would love for that to happen, but...
Sure. Yeah.
It's all complicated, you know. Especially since the cast, you know, what do you do? Does Marianne figure into that in a minor role? And Olympia's dead now.
Yeah.
You start messing with the pieces, you end up with something that doesn't feel true to the original. I think it would stand alone as a film, but that's all I really know about it.
Okay.
What did Alan say?
Much the same. Yeah. Well, we'd love to see it in whatever way it could potentially happen.
Well, fortunately, there's a thing called a book.
Yeah.
That's in.
Mm-hmm. We know that
it is out. Possible to. It is possible to just see those characters there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Armistead Maupin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. I've held you up.
Oh, don't
no,
worry.
It
don't
was,
worry.
Please, worth it. Again, always worth the wait. And we don't want to keep your pot roast waiting.
No. Get to that roast.
All right. Lovely spending
so
time with
you,
guys.
Thank
what
you.
An honor.
Yeah, and likewise.
And that is our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at HomophiliaPod. Homophilia is a World of Wonder production, music by Ben Wise. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky, and our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.